My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about The Final Station, which is a survival horror game developed by Do My Best Games and published by Tiny Build for the PC and consoles in 2016.
Do My Best Games is very jellical.
I love that as a studio name.
Yeah. I'd vote for you, Games. This episode was executive produced by Ivan. Big thanks to Ivan. Mm-hmm. Ivan is the person who also sponsored the Hammer Fight game. And Ivan is very good at bringing us games that I have not heard talked about or don't know very much about that are interesting. Ivan specifically wanted us to get to the DLC of this, which we did. We usually don't do the DLC along with the game, but this is a really short game.
Yes.
Structurally, we're going to talk about the main game first and then the DLC in the second part of the episode.
I have not heard about this, and like part of my work is to like trawl, and has been for a long time, to like trawl Steam for horror games. So this one slipped through my filter.
It's very obscure. It feels like one of the more obscure things we've done, just in terms of how much footprint I was able to find looking around about it. It's neat though. Just getting that out there. I think this is, if you know, we get through these generalities and this sounds cool to you, give it a play. Mm-hmm. It's short and interesting.
I can say right now it's a recommend, right?
Good. I like it a lot. You play as Edward Jones, who is a train conductor who is conscripted to carry the special cargo and survivors after an alien invasion called the Second Visitation starts. It is a zombie game. It says it's an alien invasion. It is a zombie game.
Yes. There are these capsules that are being launched at the Earth. Gas is being released, and they turn into zombies made of or covered in black goo.
And down to there being special infected. It is a zombie game.
Yes.
And we'll talk about the graphics a little bit later, but how that contributes to this is really nice.
Yes. So you're crossing the country, and this is a very bifurcated game. There are two modes. You are exploring these ruined towns, searching for supplies, and trying to find the code that is needed to unblock your train so you can take the ride and then get to the next stop.
Yeah. It's got a rhythm to it. Mm-hmm. There's modal or bifurcated games where it's like, you know, Tomb Raider, where it's like, oh, it's time for a climbing puzzle. And then there's bifurcated or modal games like XCOM, where, you know, you have a management phase and a action phase, you know, tactics phase. This is closer to the second version of that. When you're exploring, you can talk to people, you can loot for scrap and supplies. This happens in kind of destroyed towns. There are zombies here you're fighting. This is kind of a 2D town scavenge thing. You're going to be doing a lot of combat in this. The combat is cool in this.
I found it it was way more engaging than I expected it to be, given the style.
The fact that it's ultimately very simple in terms of verbs and such. This is you have a melee attack, and you have fine control with your firearm. You aim with the mouse, similar to how you do in Gunpoint. And then enemies require different attacks. Headshots really count, ammo is very limited. When you are doing your 2D combat, you're kind of managing a knockback for this that can make it, you're kind of juggling the enemy. You cannot just button mash. And you are very, very fragile. Several enemies can get to you and you will die really quickly. So you have to treat every combat encounter pretty carefully. This does the thing that I like in video games where the Goomba enemy, like the very early first enemy, can still be an interesting threat late in the game.
Yeah. They are very good at giving you like interesting and difficult mix-ups.
Yes.
And like they need to be addressed with tactics that are just different enough that prioritizing targets and figuring out how to draw them apart involves a great deal of like tactical consideration.
Using the environment in a 2D side view. Thing. Like you're looking at a dollhouse environment and you have to use those elevation changes and such to plan your approaches and how to deal with whatever's in the room you just opened.
Yeah. A lot of attacking from stairs.
Yes. Yeah. Ladder stairs. Yeah. Things of that nature.
Also something that I forgot to make a note of here. There are items you can pick up and throw.
Yes.
And this is an instant kill. Like you just wang something with a chair and it goes down.
Or a toilet.
Yeah.
Like if there's rooms in this where you just get to pick up and huck toilets out the windows and there's no zombies. Mm-hmm. You're just doing it for the love of the game.
Yeah.
There's also explosive barrels, and those are as risky to you as they are to the enemy.
Yeah.
As well they should be. This sounds like it's going to be really annoying. There's very generous checkpointing.
Yes.
In this. So it's fine. Mm-hmm. But you can't just go and go a whole hog. You get medkits as you're out in the world. Medkits are very important. And you use these to heal. But these are also a resource for the secondary segment, the mm-hmm. management train segment.
Yeah. Extremely light management. Walked into this seeing, oh, this is like a train management simulation. You know, crack my knuckles here.
This is not going to scratch any train itch.
No, not at all. But every med kit that you use in the stages by taking damage from dumb mistakes is one that you can't use to keep your survivors alive. You have to babysit some meters. There is a hunger meter and a health meter. And if they bottom out, they die. You also find food out in the wasteland,
and they you don't have to feed yourself for this. Yep. And each passenger has something they'll give you if they make it to the next kind of checkpoint station. Mm-hmm. So it's doing a little bit of a like a papers please kind of thing, trying to put you in a tricky moral situation where somebody might be more sympathetic. Mm-hmm. You might like somebody more and you want to keep them alive, but they give you less of a good bonus. Yeah. If you keep them alive. On top of this, like a really clever touch mm-hmm. on this is that the train is also a busy board.
Yeah.
There are little micro mini games and multiple places on the train that you have to manage that are fucking up. You have to go back and forth and kind of keep them repaired, kind of whack-a-mole mm-hmm. For this. So the train keeps going. When this is happening, you cannot see the dialogue while passengers are talking.
No.
I love that touch.
It means
you're
so
not getting
good.
The whole story, but it does mean that I was placed in a situation that I can't think of myself getting in very many games, which is listening, overhearing a conversation that's giving me world building and having to go fix the fucking doodad so the train keeps going and missing part of a conversation and then going back and just catching the end of it.
Yeah.
It's very clever.
I love that.
Unsatisfying in a very satisfying way, I guess.
Yeah. This is also a reason to keep people alive because if, you know, one part of the conversation is dead, that conversation doesn't happen.
Yes.
Not all of these are critical information, but you do learn an awful lot just about like what's general knowledge and what's not. Like, how are refugees treated? How are descendants of refugees treated in this?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how we're going to get information about the story in this, because there's almost no exposition mm-hmm. in this game, which we'll get into a little, the other kind of big hook to this.
Yes.
If you fail to keep these little doodads going, the train will start powering down and your passengers will start coughing and taking damage. This never happened to me because I thought it might be a fail state. Mm-hmm. So I never let it happen, which meant I missed some conversations.
Yeah.
Definitely had some passengers die mm-hmm. During this. When they die, you can loot them. Because you can't let it go to waste.
Yeah. I guess I never looted them. I never never walked up and took their shit.
Yeah. You can take their clothes to sell it to the next guy.
It's really fucked up because sometimes they're like married couples.
Yeah. And one of them dies.
Yeah.
you can also, while you're doing this, the kind of schmutz, you know, the video game cruft you find out in the wild, or you loot off dead passengers, being crafted into medkits or ammo.
Yeah.
And again, you know, you are kind of making a choice there. There's a little bit of overlap in crafting components.
Yeah. There. You know, shotgun shells being more powerful or more expensive, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. Yeah. I found this game to be pretty easy. All told, like, this is not a super rigorous mechanical challenge. They do a good job of keeping you, you know, kind of like just above the line of, you know, sufficiency of subsistence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's also with the checkpointing. If you ever really flub, like similar to any kind of survival horror game, if you ever flub a stretch,
mm-hmm.
you can say like, I would like to have done that better with less resources.
Yeah.
And then redo it or die automatically. Like, this is an easy game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, full stop, I think.
Yeah.
The hardest part was getting used to the melee combat, mm-hmm. And seeing how viable it was. And once you have that, you're kind of golden. There's still tricky encounters, but, like, I was not in failure or in danger of failing, mm-hmm. really, very much. Died a couple of times when I got overwhelmed by zombies, but again, then you get a checkpoint right away and fix it.
Yeah, that's the biggest tip in this. Melee is super important. It, you know, puts you in greater danger, just like melee does in survival horror games.
In real life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you do save yourself resources.
Yes.
And you can, like, there's no stamina unless you charge and do a strong attack, which there's not really a reason to do.
It's difficult to use in combat. It's more for navigation.
Yeah.
There's not stamina, but there's a cooldown on attacking.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. You attack at a rhythm.
Yeah.
For this, so you can't just. It reminds me a little bit of Left 4 Dead. How mm-hmm. when you spam the melee attack, the push eventually just slows down. Like mm-hmm. you can spam it for a little bit and then it slows down.
Yeah.
Through that, there are also segments where you just have kind of walking simulator stuff where you're walking around. There is no danger.
Mm-hmm.
You're just reading notes and talking to people to get world building. And then every certain number of stations, you get a store.
Yes.
You get a kind of a hub where you can buy and sell stuff to kind of prepare for the next leg of the journey.
Yeah. Let's talk about the graphics. This is a really good looking game.
It's kind of like Last Door-ish, like in terms of level of fidelity.
I was going to draw that comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat. It looks good. It's very, gets across what it needs to get across really well. There's a good atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Doing this kind of chunky pixel art style allows them to do scale and have it look really nice. Like when something is very big
mm-hmm.
and shows up, like in the background, it looks big and your brain is filling in all of the detail.
Yeah.
Really good.
Very little is repeated. Like every stage kind of has its own look.
Yeah.
And for as drab as a lot of it can feel, there are spots of very intense color.
Yes.
That come through.
Artful.
Yeah.
Like in terms of that.
I love this soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
It is super like droney and ambient, but just full of dread to me. Mm-hmm. Like I want to get a hold of this and just kind of have it to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Like when you just want to need some dread around the apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. When I don't have enough dread in 2026.
You got to add some dread. Turn up the D's. So this gameplay is fun. It's real. I like anything that's, you know, there's two systems and they interact with each other. But the way this game tells its story and its story is really interesting.
Yeah.
Some of the dialogue is a little stilted or mistranslated. But the fact that they start you right in the middle with no mm-hmm. exposition and you're just getting the backstory from other people is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I understand a good amount of this story. I would be lying if I said I understood everything.
Mm-hmm.
That happens in this. It doesn't feel like a complete story to me. It feels a little bit like a slice of a story.
Yeah.
We do start getting realms and a G-Man
mm-hmm.
type figure in this as well. So there's some abstractions to it, but it's really neat how it comes across. Like it's all the details are very compelling. They are meted out at a really nice pace. It is interesting to read people's kind of apocalypse logs and see how they're dealing with this cool sci-fi threat.
Yes. Yeah, the world building is huge in this.
Yes.
Like this is not, you know, this does not map onto anything in the real world. You will have noticed earlier when we talked about this, oh, this is the second visitation. 106 years ago in the history of the game, there was something called the first visitation that kind of like shaped the world. Like this has happened before and mm-hmm. it is just recent enough in memory that everything is shaped around preparing for it to do it, for it to happen again.
Yeah.
Like this is real big, you know, I have this in the development notes a little bit later, but like there's no direct inspiration cited for what they did here, but it is really hard not to see Evangelion in this. Mm. And it is really hard not to see like just the general work of the Strugatsky brothers, the people who did Roadside Picnic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got that kind of like, this is a Finnish game. Mm-hmm. It feels extremely Russian.
Yes.
So it's Finnish developers I mentioned, studio is two people, Oleg Sergeev and Andrei Rumak. Mm-hmm. And other people contributed, of course, out of this, but those are the primary people.
Yes.
Development was 2.5 years, and details on kind of the development is pretty scarce. Mm-hmm. And like what they decided to do, this is an obscure game.
Yeah, there were like some like gamedeveloper.com interviews, things of that nature. But what we do find, like the way that the story is told was intentional. They wanted to make something that people had to piece together.
Yeah, yep, and succeeded. Hmm. You know, on this, Tiny Build picked up the game, offered a lot of development support. Got this over the finish line, and you know, kind of unfortunately, like they got mixed reviews from critics, and is pretty obscure. Again, yeah. You don't see a lot about it. Finding information online is scarce.
Yeah.
Specifically, kind of you know tragic in that it is a game where they set out to do really intricate world building that is told in a really indirect way, which is generally like a fandom nip. The mm-hmm. children crave lore so much. And they just kind of passed on this one.
Yeah.
You know, to catch kind of a critical mass, it did not hit the center of the bell curve well enough for what people want in terms of deciding to obsess over, mm-hmm. you know, theories and such.
It does that thing that is really good in something that has a Dark Souls, you know, style story, like, you know, semi, like epistemological, mm-hmm. not epistemological. What am I thinking of?
Archaeological a little bit, but like,
yeah.
epistemological, you are getting...
That's the word. I was like, for epistological, not epistemological. Very little to do with like the source for the search for ultimate truth. Yeah. But there are references to places that you are never going to see, like different cultures, different kind of like countries.
Yeah.
People either come from or allude to. Like there's a lot more than you see here. It does seem like something that a fandom would have cropped up around. Listening to two people describe what happens and kind of give their best guesses as to the story is not the ideal way to experience this. Like, this is a service. Like, I like to think that we have brought, you know, that Ivan has helped bring this, you know, game to more people's attention to get it a second look through us. But like, this is a recommend. Like,
yeah.
The game plus the DLC was like 8 hours for me or something like that.
It's a real snack. I think that the degree to which it is a strong recommend is going to depend a little bit on whether you are compelled by the gameplay hook. Mm-hmm. Like the story itself is the big draw, but the story is doled out in pretty small drips and drabs. Mm-hmm. I think if you don't hate this gameplay, if you're into it, at least a little bit, like I think this is fun. It's going to be too simple for people who want a more complicated or skill-based.
Yeah.
System for this, or a more complex simulation, both of which. And some of that stuff does change in the DLC, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about, but you do want to play the original before you play the DLC. Yeah. You know, they are dependent on each other as a thing. In terms of this, like, kind of not making it, or not making it, in terms of being something where they allude to world building, it's nowhere near this in terms of quality of prose, but it reminded me a little bit of Disco Elysium Jr.,
yeah.
In the idea of alluding to places and events far off in the world and history that you will never see or interface with.
Yeah, there's something about the about the gas, like the allusion to an alien presence that never physically shows up.
Yeah,
the kind of the inscrutability of the purpose that really calls the Pale to mind from the Disco Elysium setting.
Yeah, it's nice. Worked out well. Recommendation. Good game. Mm-hmm. We are going to ruin it right now. When you say the wrong way to experience it, like, it's better than nothing. But I think letting this stuff wash over you, even if you don't feel like you necessarily piece everything together, is mm-hmm. a really nice experience.
Yes. Yeah.
So we start off Act 1. We're walking down these dark tunnels, finding dead bodies and lots of black goo. This is a flash forward mm-hmm. of sorts. You reach this kind of church sanctuary, and it's full of these dead people with white eyes.
No, full of live people.
Or live people, like, rather.
Yeah,
yeah, non, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, not like, you know, non-apparently mutated people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's a guy at the center of this, and there are these circular symbols painted on the walls. You will find notes and journals and conversations later on that refer to, like, the dreams starting up, you know, the symbols on the walls.
Yeah. And because you're just in the video game, you're doing what you have to do. You know, you're mm-hmm. moving forward. So you find a ladder, you climb down, and it is full of zombies with white eyes, and you do not have a way to defend yourself at this point.
Yeah.
This is a mandatory death. Fades to black, and we get a little screen. This is 106th year since the first visitation.
Yeah.
Super evocative.
Mm-hmm. And you wake up in your house. You're Edward Jones, and you've got to go to work. You're coming back from a vacation. Which is why, like, some of these new measures are really new to you. Mm-hmm. And you leave your house and you start getting, like, the propaganda from the, like, administration that is currently running things. Like, the president, Armand White, you know, is, like, announcing that anybody over the age of 16 must attend these second visitation drills.
Mm-hmm. Duck and cover.
Yeah, yeah. There's kind of a sense of, like, constant preparedness going on.
Yeah, in this, you know, almost like constant preparedness and also getting prepared again feeling. Yeah. Like things are getting bad again.
Yeah.
We find there's a flyer looking for engineers to work on the Guardian, something called the Guardian at the Metropole. Mm-hmm. So we know a Guardian is in place.
Yeah.
And the train is being held in place. The new innovation since you've been on vacation are these blockers.
Yeah.
These things that stop the train from moving forward until you insert a code.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, any kind of, this would be like a border control kind of thing. Yeah. Physically, the train cannot continue until you stop and get this code, so we know every train that's going through.
Yes.
Huge, like, quarantine feelings.
Yeah, every train is local, and everybody complains about these fucking things.
Yes.
It does not make any sense why these are here, even and especially in the circumstances. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
but yeah, this is the thing that we're going to be looking for in every stop mm-hmm. that we reach. Like, you'll get there. The code is supposed to be in the station, but, like, somebody, like, will have forgotten it at their house. And it never, ever is.
It is always somebody, like, spread it to three different locations or whatever. in a way that gets very funnily, like, artificial.
Yeah.
At a certain point. The computer has a chat log saying, you know, hey, somebody might not be the right, expressing concern that a specific person isn't the right person to drive this train, and alluding this train's going to be very important.
Yes.
But we're at work. We take the code. We drive to the next stop. Mm-hmm. Next stop, Nimlard. We get here. The code is held by an engineer who's out to lunch. This is just training us softly that we're going to have to go outside of the office.
Yes.
To get stuff. We are not in combat. You know, we're not in scary zone yet.
No, no. And this is your first train ride segment. I don't think you have a passenger to take care of in this.
You're just doing the little doodad.
Yeah.
It's really explaining when we say doodads. These are like literal meter balancing things. Sometimes you hold the mouse for a certain amount of time. Sometimes you click between different points.
Sometimes there's a little timing game. It depends on the device.
They are not engaging.
No.
The idea here is to distract you.
Mm-hmm.
Not to engage you.
And to give you another thing that is like, oh shit, I forgot about that. Like, the lights are out.
Yeah. Yeah. Give you a little bit of papers, please ask stress as you're going.
Yeah. Yeah. You reach Central Station Keskis.
Say.
Yeah, really long and dumb name. Yeah. But you, things are going wrong. Like, at the previous places, people talked about, like, hey, like, we've lost contact with the West. This is weird. There's something going on that is only being talked about indirectly until you reach this. This is a military checkpoint that has been set up. Very Half-Life 2. Citizens are, like, being brutalized. Like, they're not being led onto the train system.
Yeah. It's rough. There's been an evacuation order, but they have not gotten official word from the council. The game is doing a good job of portraying the confusion that happens in a national emergency when there are multiple controlling bodies, you know, governmental bodies that are not on the same page and you're not getting unified instructions.
Yeah.
We gather some passengers together and we leave. And we had to mess with the air filtration here.
Yeah.
Stopping these bars at a neutral point. Again, these are such nothing. It's just to stop you from overhearing.
Yeah, I do not. I do not make specific note of them.
Yeah, it's not worth even. It's funny because in any other game, these would be noteworthy. And like one of the things that like this is no Papers, Please. You know, in terms of doing some similar things, Papers, Please, making that little tasklet engaging in addition to being stressful was a real triumph. This is not going for that necessarily.
No.
This brings us into Act Two here.
We reach the emergency station, and the station is mostly empty. And we get a document saying, "Hey, we have new permissions. Like, you get much more autonomy. Also, you've been given you've been given firearm access. The population is disarmed here, and you can now carry around a gun, which is rare. This is a point in some later conversations. Martial law is in full effect." And you're getting to a point where the capsules have dropped. You kind of start seeing them, like they're either in the background or you walk by them. Sometimes they're just embedded in the side of a building. Mm-hmm. Like these have fallen like artillery.
Yeah. In a way that kind of looked like Cannibalt to me.
Yeah.
This is making people die. They're puking up black goo in this military infirmary that we walk through. It is an outbreak. Mm-hmm. And we talked to the general. We get here. He says, "Hey, your destination doesn't exist anymore. you can't go there. You have a new place to go, and you have very important new cargo, and we're not allowed to know what's inside."
Not at all.
Every time that happens, I think about Final Fantasy IV. Mm-hmm. And we're told to save all the survivors we can, but that is a secondary objective. You're kind of setting up the moral versus mechanical element to this. Mm-hmm.
That is true. Like, there's really no penalty, as far as I can tell, for having people die, except you don't get money or whatever resources they might have had.
Resources. You also spent fewer resources.
Yes.
Like, it's juggling you can do if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every level is kind of structured a little bit like this, where there is like a main path that you take out, sometimes above ground, most of the time above ground, but then you kind of like go underground and double back.
Yes.
One of the big complaints about this game was its linearity, which I can see that is changed in the DLC a little bit.
It is true that it is linear, but I feel like this would be a good dispatch topic at some point. Like linear, and if we haven't already done it, linearity can't be a fault in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that all video games should be nonlinear is kind of crazy.
That's real like late 2000s.
Yeah. It should be a 5-second gameplay loop only. You know, nothing else. It's very dated games thinking, I think. It is very linear. To me, the criticism that I have space for that's regarded this is it can feel artificial. Mm-hmm. Walking above ground to all the way to the right and then taking the underground path back to the left does feel a little bit samey after a certain point. Like every town being laid out that way feels a little bit weird.
Yes. Yeah. But we pass through this facility where we have subjects being held in observation cells. Like some of the people are being filtered out of the infirmary and brought down here for containment.
No good.
No.
So we make our way to Wallach. And the in between these, there are train segments.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that much because you keep a doodad going and you feed the people who are hungry and medicate the people who are hurt. Yeah. Something that fucked me up in this is there's a little drop icon. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had to give people water.
That's blood.
Bleeding.
Yeah.
So you have to heal them. Mm-hmm. But they're a bucket with a hole in it.
Yes.
If you heal them with a couple med kits, they will stop bleeding, but you have to do it twice in one trip. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they will continue to bleed. You can just keep them going until you get to the station, but you don't know in advance how many stops you have until the station. So it's a little bit of a risk-reward thing. Mm-hmm. And two med kits is a lot. Like in terms of just letting everyone who's doing this vicariously know the numbers we're looking at, like you might have like three at most.
Yeah.
It is, and maybe five passengers at most. It's unlikely that you're going to have enough medkits for everybody. And you're also using those yourself.
Mm-hmm. So Wallach is completely destroyed. This city station is full of dead bodies. And we get our first weapon here. We get a pistol. This is pretty basic. A headshot will kill something in one hit most times, though.
Yeah. And kind of, I always like a mouse aiming in like gunpoint. So mouse aiming a gun like this, it's fun and interesting to get a headshot. It feels somehow more tricky than it does if I was over the shoulder or in first person. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can miss by just a little bit in a way that feels very real to me.
Yeah.
You can also melee these zombies. Basic zombies just take a couple hits. They move slowly and swipe at you. They're zombies. On the next train ride, we get a message from another driver. We also have to check our instant messages.
Yeah.
In this kind of making this a retro future kind of thing. You always have to be on AIM.
God, I fucking miss AIM.
Yeah. The having an away message that was like your GameFAQs SIG that people had to opt into that nobody read.
Yeah,
Nobody cared. Like, you never looked at one of those and been like, man, fucking, that's a cool away message.
I really like that song lyric. This rules.
This rules. That, like, shake it like a Polaroid picture? Whoa, that's something you shake a lot. That's pretty cool. It's just grotesque teenage self-expression for the point of self-expression. But this driver you're talking to on Instant Messenger says he doesn't remember there being a tunnel at his location there from before. And these all get ominously cut off.
Uh-huh.
I think you talk to everybody once
who's
on your friends list on here.
Yeah. A lot of the IM conversations, like the DMs that you find, kind of trail off as well. It's always like, hey, you there? What's going on?
Yeah. With you know, scary results.
Yeah.
The passengers are arguing if anything matters anymore now that weapons are legal.
There's a guy who's carrying around a gun, and the woman is like, that's a crime. You can go to prison for that. And
why do we still have crimes? Like, there's a visitation happening.
Yeah, it's all like, then no police.
Yeah. So we get to Midford. This town is completely dead, but we find a new survivor in the basement of a convenience store, and he's injured. They're introducing us to this. His health is going to slowly drain.
Yeah.
Throughout, so we have to decide how many med kits we want to throw into this guy.
I didn't like make a note and draw a direct correlation, but some of the passengers are worth way more than the others.
Yes,
I believe that it would make sense if these were higher value to keep alive.
It would make sense mechanically, but I do think that they are trying to. So, like that guy who has the gun, who is a dickhead, in this, is worth a lot if you get him in, but he's a huge asshole.
Yeah.
It's also making you do papers, please ask moral decisions. Mm-hmm. That gets kind of emphasized a little bit more in the DLC for this, in terms of just like how pleasant somebody is literally a stat that you can have. But yeah, you're deciding whether the reward or whether humanity is worth it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. The next place we go to is called Bridgestone. The battery on this breaker is missing. So we have to find that in addition to the code. And it's an object we have to carry. It's not something that goes in our inventory.
Yes.
So you cannot fight while you have it, other than toss, you know, hucking it at zombies.
Yeah. There's kind of a hive-like hostel building that you go through. You know, notes are there are notes complaining about the accommodations. Like, this was not what they advertised. There's a guy across the way who showers with his window wide open, like proudly showing everybody what he's got.
Yeah. No good. We skipped over a thing, I think, because we do get soldier zombies here, but we got the baby Suggses before this.
Oh, I forgot about the babies.
You figure out about the babies because they're like the worst enemy in this. They're the hardest enemy to deal with.
Yeah, no, you have to like, there are some of them where you really want to shoot. There are like two where it's mandatory. But the little itty bitty like flea men guys, they're super fast and they can spam their attack. Like these guys will kind of like lock you. I lost a lot of health. Yes.
Yeah, you'll die quickly. Learning how to melee these guys was very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do. You kind of have to tap the attack button at a rhythm while backing up.
Yeah.
Like holding up, back up, and you won't move while you're attacking, but you'll kind of do it at a rhythm where they won't get you.
Yeah.
And these guys are a huge emergency when there's more than one or if there's one on both sides.
Yeah. The pincer attack is rough.
It causes situations where you have to, really interestingly, like you can either go down a ladder, see this, and then come in through a different way. Or though, if you go down the ladder and see this, they come to crowd the bottom of the ladder and you've missed your opportunity.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have to take that damage to make some space.
Yeah.
Like these guys are a real problem. They're the hardest of the zombies.
Yeah. Kind of importantly, I only thought now to mention it, enemies don't do contact damage. You can run past them. They only do damage when they attack. So like if you want to take the gamble to get everybody on one side, you can just make a rush and take whatever hit they give you.
Yeah. Soldier zombies that pop up here. These are ones we have to melee before we shoot them. And you cannot melee their body. You knock off their helmet with their melee and then you shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're being conserving ammo, it's good, but you can run into situations where you just can't kill one of these. You just have to deal with them.
Yeah. These guys and the exploding ones we're going to meet a little bit later, they're a reason that you always want to have at least one or two bullets.
Yeah. The exploding guys are like puzzles.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting. There's a survivor here we find in a basement. He's got all these discarded pages. He's working on his novel. You know, not the time.
Nope.
the next station we go to is called Nelville's A5. The station chief here forgot his code at home, so we had to go find it. Again, it gets pretty funny.
Why are you taking it home, bro?
Yeah, it can stay at work. You have locked up lockers.
Yeah.
And shit. Yeah.
Yeah. You get to a factory and you find your first exploding zombie. Like you said, Gary, these are puzzles. They do area effect damage. Used wisely, they can blow up a whole gang of enemies that they're around. But they will walk toward you. They do not die just in one shot, though.
They when you hit them with anything, mm-hmm. it starts like a timer. Yes. So if you just shoot them with one shot, they will die, but it takes a few seconds.
Yeah, well, they catch fire and they will rush toward you.
Yes. So these are guys you want to go up a ladder, ping them, and then go back down the ladder. Whoop, 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 whoop. Because mm-hmm. the zombies can't do ladders. But the game, again, very cannily, there are ladders that are facing the camera and you can shoot off of those. And then there are ladders that have their side to the camera and you cannot.
Yes.
So they will put these rooms in different situations where you can or cannot snipe one of these guys. Mm-hmm. And this is where a system that I would have really liked to have seen more done with comes into play, which is being in a vantage point from another room and smashing out a window. Mm-hmm. When you do so, you can see what's in the room below you,
yeah.
which is useful for a preview, but there's only a couple times where you can shoot into it.
Yeah.
This would have been smart to do more of this, where you could kind of reward exploration a little bit more mm-hmm. for scouting. There are a couple of times where they allow you to do that with an exploding zombie, and it's very satisfying.
Yes, very much so. Also satisfying when you get a ledge over a bunch of guys with some throwables. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just hucking crates left and right.
Yeah, just deal with these toilets. They're mm-hmm. your toilets now.
Deal with this box of martini glasses.
Yeah, yeah, they're your martinis now.
Uh-huh. So you get to the middle of the town and you find a huge capsule that's embedded in a crater in the ground. Like these land with force.
Yes.
That's what we get. So the station chief, we get to his house, and we get a little scenelet here. There's a note, like he spends all of his time in the basement where there's kind of like a shelter or something. And his wife is worried. Like you find an IM conversation where her friend is like, is he cheating? She's like, I don't think so. Also, what happened to you? Why did you stop responding? Mm-hmm. The wife is dead upstairs and, the husband is dead downstairs.
Yeah, it's like that couple from the Titanic if they didn't like each other. somebody we rescue here is a settler. We find the first is settler with a capital S. These are people who are refugees from the first visitation. Mm-hmm. Their country was destroyed, and in the current version of whatever country we're in, we treat these people like shit.
Yes. There's one who says something and it's just like, hey, like I could maybe understand us getting this horrible treatment if like it was another country that like killed us and we went there. But like, this was a natural disaster.
Yeah. This happened to the entire world.
Yeah.
And we came to a neighboring country. Mm-hmm. You know, this, we should have no animosity. The government of this world is not good.
No.
Yeah. Which, is video games, in general, but like this one's pretty bad.
Yeah. You reach the final stop of this act, New Costfield.
That's a very funny name for a place. It sounds like a Fallout place that was two convenience stores, uh-huh. like with some lights burnt out, like RFU or something yeah. like that. Like, yeah, we call it New Costfield because it used to be a Costingtons and a like Brookfields.
Yeah. And like when you arrive, somebody like runs out and is like, hey, is the cargo okay? Is this okay?
This is a stop, right?
Yeah.
Those are really nice. When you get there, you don't have your weapon out and you're like, mm-hmm. fuck, I made it.
Yes.
You know, the people pile out who survived your trip, you can talk to them and you get your rewards automatically from them. But it's really nice. Like, oh, I get to resupply. Like it has save room rhythms. It's like a third rhythm element mm-hmm. to this game.
Yeah. So there are only two like employees alive here. Like this place is in rough shape. They say, "Hey, you can take our shotgun if you want, and you get your second weapon. You're only going to get like you get three weapons, but one replaces the other."
Yeah,
the shotgun is like ridiculously powerful. This will go through enemies in a way that shotguns don't in video games or otherwise. And the cone of fire, like everything within it is kind of an instant kill.
Yeah, it's really powerful. You want to save this for those situations where you do have to go down to the bottom of a ladder or what have you. You pass through a subway, you have to use this battery to power a bridge. You're still doing a little adventure game things as you're in these walking sim elements until you get to the far side of town where you find something called the Peace and Quiet Resort. Here, which is a non-ironic name. It's just what it is. It's peace and it's quiet. It's very nice, actually. It's like something like a quiet hill or like a silent hillock or something like that. Like it's a comfort mound.
Silent mound.
Yeah.
But the rooms are under constant surveillance. There is screaming and people disappear in the middle of the night. People are being abducted here. There's one room that the visitation happened in between one of these disappearings and before. So it was after somebody was disappeared, but before it could be cleaned up again. And there's like a note saying like, "Hey, we need to reset this room."
Reset the room. Dark. love it. We can find a note here with a guy talking about the symbols. This dream that some old man told about with the symbols.
Yeah.
The old man told him to go down to this canyon for a passage opening.
Yeah.
There. We find a group of survivors. The wounded ones stay behind, but we get our new people cargo. Mm-hmm. And we leave what our cargo is, you know, thinking about Final Fantasy IV, we leave and the city gets obliterated. It was a nuke. It happens in the background while people are talking and commenting on it and while you're doing the busy board.
Yep.
You can't just look out the window and look at it. You have to keep these stupid meters going to keep the train going.
Yep.
Great moment.
Yeah. So like this city was sacrificed in an effort of a futile effort of containment.
Yeah. Sad. This brings us into Act 3. That's kind of the wham for the end of Act 2.
Yeah. And we reach Ristol, the city of factories. And the station chief says like, "Hey, the mayor wants to talk to you." This guy named Adam Thornton, you know, just go meet him at the top of his tower. And like, this is a functioning city that is not really touched by the infection. Like you find a newspaper, you can spend money to get this. And like, there's an article about people smuggling and hoarding Electrum. Like it is illegal to, possess this.
Everybody wants Electrum.
Yes. And like, as you're like talking to people, nobody here knows that the second visitation is happening.
Yeah.
And many of them, including like some of the passengers we've picked up as well, like there are people who believe that this is a conspiracy theory. Like, no, the news said, or I read something online, blah, blah, blah. Saying like, yeah, no, this is this is ridiculous. This is contributing to the disarray.
This is the kind of theming that made a lot of sense in 2016, but fortunately, we're past that now.
Yes,
this kind of conspiracy theory or the government not knowing what they're doing or getting mixed messages, the government hiding things, just doesn't happen in 2026. But in 2016, if you weren't alive then, it was a huge problem.
Yeah,
so this game was ripped from the headlines.
Yeah, massive problem in 2016. The constant disinformation,
better not.
Confusing responses, and acting as kind of like a society-wide sabotage.
Yeah. But now, thank God, we're on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in the future will listen to this without context, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
So we get to do a shopping phase here. We get food, ammo, and you can buy weapon mods, like mm-hmm. laser sight for your gun and stuff, so you can see where you're aiming, things like that. We talked to an old man who was alive for the first visitation, which is very rare, and his memories are really scattered.
Yeah.
People make pilgrimages to meet this guy. It's so rare.
Yeah.
And he says, when the capsules fell, not everyone was affected the same way. And you can see he got kind of like a small dose of it. His eyes are still white. His remaining eye is still white.
Yeah.
From this.
Yeah. He's like, hey, nobody pays attention to the second part. Like, everybody wants to know, like, what it was like to live through the zombie thing. But there were others. There were people who were not. Yeah. Who were infected but didn't turn. This is going to be massively important.
Yeah.
We get to the mayor, and he talks about how, like, yeah, no, this electrum dust that's in the air from our processing blocks radio transmissions. Like, nobody knows what's happening. And, like, you could go and warn people, but they're not going to believe you. Yeah. Like, he doesn't seem very concerned about this at all.
He's got a real, like, kind of detached, surreal air to his speech.
Yes.
Everyone who is in a position of power in this has a very specific tenor of talking that is really unnerving and good. Mm-hmm. I really like it. He's under order from the council to give up the factory's power core because it needs to contribute to the construction of the Guardian. We take the power core. We're going to Metropol with the power core for the Guardian. We still don't know exactly what the Guardian is.
No.
But we will.
Yeah. We reach the city called Hazelborn, which is destroyed. A lot of the houses are like halfway burned down, kind of making a navigational hazard. And there are rooms that are just full of blood, like slaughters happened.
Yeah, really nasty. There's a shelter beneath the city that has a little digital reading, little population reading on the inside or mm-hmm. for the inside. That's very funny, where it says civilian 0, military 0, unidentified objects 1,214. basically everyone turned.
Yeah. That's a party down there.
Yeah, exactly. Monster party. There's a facility here that has a nuke beneath it that's marked the last bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they have there, like, this got destroyed before anything could be done.
Yes.
Destroyed, yeah. Overtaken.
Yeah. You've picked up one passenger who is a belligerent alcoholic who does not believe that this is the second visitation. And another guy who's like a military man who we picked up who's like sworn to secrecy. It's like, hey, no, I took an oath not to say like what's happening.
Yeah. We go to Arden, where there's not a whole lot new. We find a guy who was recruited to build the Guardian here, and he has a workshop here. We have a little spider-like machine, kind of hinting what the Guardian is going to be, sort of.
He was making a mech. He was making a Metal Gear for his .com.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's they're going to get a Metal Gear for our .gov. in a moment. Something in a bigger Metal Gear.
Yeah.
We go to Lost Connection is the next chapter here. The train goes, things get dark.
Yeah, and we kind of go into a tunnel.
We try to message Central Command. Be like, hey, it was our route switch, but we get no response.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to a station that has gone dark.
Yeah. Here. Lit only by red emergency lights. It's a really cool and eerie effect.
Looks great.
And you find all of these notes talking about, like, hey, you know, we've got a month until this inspection for our ventilation system. Get it together. The ventilation guy is coming in 18 weeks. How's it going?
Yeah.
The people here died because of the poorly maintained ventilation system.
Yeah. So the guy who's here, who's just like reading a newspaper, he's fine. He doesn't want to go to Metropol with us. We offer to rescue him. He does not want to be rescued.
Yeah. He has white eyes.
Yeah. So he's been turned a little bit.
Yeah.
When we leave the facility, we're under this odd night sky with two moons under mm-hmm. it. This is where you could be I don't know if we're in a realm or this world has two moons.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. There is a G-Man about sending us into G-Man realms of the mind.
Right. We're in a tunnel that is not there.
Yes.
This was alluded to in a conversation that we had on the train before, you know, like just...
Oh, was there somebody a tunnel on my route?
Yeah. That I am that we got. When we get out of this, like, somebody's going to say, like, why the fuck did this take so long? Like, there's no tunnel between there and here.
We went through like a time tube.
Yes. There. Yeah. And also, like, other scenes take place at night. You don't see the moon, but there are definitely not two moons in the sky.
At other times, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that is.
No, do not.
Like, I don't have an explanation for what the realm is.
No.
For this.
You reach another facility and you find this guy who's like pinned to the corner of a room and his nerves are completely shot. Like, he doesn't really speak. All he does is like say, like, hey, like, get back to the train as fast as you can.
Yeah. So we can leave.
This is super cool. Realize that this is important. We'll talk about who he is when we get there.
There's a small Japanese restaurant where powerful men are gathered, the mayor, the president, uh-huh. and then our G-Man, who is a strange old man who has a hat and a gun.
Yeah.
Here. They just kind of have off-putting dialogue. yeah. at this point. When we get the code, there's a note on it that says, farewell, P.S., you still have time. Or farewell gift, P.S., you still have time.
Yeah.
We're going to find out what we have time for at the end.
Yeah.
Here. And the next stop we go to, we got meat mass on the walls, mm-hmm. Meat moss. There's nobody alive, but there is gross goo
yeah.
on the walls. Ending Act 3 and take us into Act 4.
Yeah. Taking us to the LABS bunker. Yes. L-Abs.
L-Abs? What is that?
The station chief here, this is the guy who's like, hey, where the fuck were you? I was in a mystery tunnel.
Yeah. There's no tunnel. Well, I don't know what to tell you, pal.
Large like, Marge sent me. Yeah.
Yeah.
The code, the boss from the boss of the shelter has it. We get to go down into the one of these shelters that we've seen sealed ones before. And this one's operational and it's a clean lab. Scientists yes. are down here and they're running experiments on zombies, studying the effects of this positive gas. The only thing they're really able to determine is that like it encourages something called positive cell growth.
Sounds positive. Mm-hmm. It's a trope I love. Anytime the world is ending and there are zombies and there are people studying them, mm-hmm. figuring them out, it's like one of my favorite things. I just yeah. like it. The shelter is doomed. Their food container has not been loaded.
Yep.
The leadership thinks that it has, but it has not. They're all going to starve to death. Really notably, this is a resupply area, but we cannot buy food here.
No.
They don't have food to give us. And at this point, I needed food for my boys on the train.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I was losing people to hunger.
Well, and the next station we go to is going to have a lot of food to pick up. Like the mm-hmm. game wants you to, if you can make it to the next station, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But it wants you to have this resource panic here. Like
yeah.
for a game that is very simple, there are a lot of little canny design decisions in this.
Yeah.
The shelter head tells us we have to deliver the lab's CPU crystal to Metropole. And he doesn't know why Thornton would give this up so easily.
Yeah.
You know, as far as I know, he's not on our side anymore.
Yeah. What's the other side, dude?
Yeah. yeah. Dr. Breen shit. And we travel through these wintry mountains to make it there, and we get to Modaline Valley.
Yes. And we get our big zombies here for the first time. I was a little bit disappointed. These are just more durable zombies.
Yeah, they're no problem. It's they take slightly more hits, but if you're doing melee, mm-hmm. like just one more hit, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's worker living quarters here, and these are all wired with security cameras. Again, we have the surveillance state stuff, a real problem in 2016. Mm-hmm. And we find a fighting ring underground with a bunch of big zombies in it.
Yeah.
Again, a trope I really like.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you think they were fighting the zombies, or do you think that these are just big,
these
tough guys?
Dead boxers.
Dead boxers, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, dead boxers, that's like a cellar door kind of thing. I don't know. I kind of like dead boxers.
There's also a big cistern full of blood with a body floating in
love
it.
Love the blood cistern. On the train ride, we get a scientist who's here and tells another survivor why the train keeps us safe. There's a radiation on the train.
Yes.
That is from what we're transporting. Mm-hmm. That is why the people on the train are not succumbing to the gas.
And very importantly, why you are not succumbing
yes,
to the gas.
Yes, as we're going to find out.
Yeah. There's an oil platform level that has different kind of geometry, but nothing much happens here.
It's a mechanics level.
Yeah.
We get to the rail factory, ESK. And again, we're doing the mechanical stuff here, nothing really new, but we find a computer conversation that talks about the facilities in disarray after something called the Blacksmith was pulled in to work on the Guardian.
Yeah.
They will not be able to mass produce the model of train that we drive because resources are all being turned towards this Guardian thing.
Yes. This place is falling apart without the Blacksmith. He was like a load-bearing engineer.
Yes.
The model of train that we have is considered to be like this massive nuisance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This brings us to personal station O2T.
I love this so much.
Yeah.
We have to go to Dracula's castle.
It's very Draculated.
Yeah. We reach the station and there's a note that says like, hey, this place is really weird. Like, this isn't a city. This isn't a town. This rich old guy who lives up on a mountain commissioned a station to bring people here. Like, he wanted to stop.
There's one Resident Evil, like, mm-hmm. place where, like, somebody made a Spencer mansion, basically.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We head up there, and the first floor is this church. There's a statue of a man with white eyes, who we've seen in our dream.
Yeah.
And there's an inscription on the statue that says, one must still have chaos within oneself to give birth to a star.
rules.
Yeah, good sentence.
Yeah. You ring the church bell, and this opens the way to the sub basements, and you can see that the chairs in the dining hall, with the rotting meal and everything, they are rigged to drop people through trap doors.
Yeah, Shanghai tunnels.
Yeah,
kind of stuff. And there are a bunch of dead zombie bodies on these lab tables down there, and we find a box of train driver uniforms.
Uh-huh.
I love that. Like, oh.
Yeah. And also cells. Like, this guy's been just harving these train drivers left and right. Anybody who stops by is like, come in for an opulent feast. And then,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And you just go, you sit down, you get dumped.
Yeah.
Here. At the very bottom of the basement, there's an old man who's sobbing. And he says, it didn't work. Can you even understand me? It did not work.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Yeah.
Scary, good,
spooky. He was looking for a cure, and it didn't work.
Yeah. He decided to do his own science.
Uh-huh.
For this area, man decides to build PS4 in his own garage.
We reach a classified place of this. This is kind of a military installation. And we get a new weapon for mm-hmm. this. This is a huge level. You know, haven't talked about like specific encounters or anything. The rifle uses your pistol ammo.
Yeah, it replaces your pistol.
Yes.
Here, and it has better range. It's more powerful, as you might expect.
But it doesn't have the mods that I bought. I got really used to having the laser sight, Gary.
Yeah. It feels a little bit like a downgrade at this point. I'm also at the point now where if I'm using pistol ammo, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, I've gotten good at the game by now, even though it's not super hard.
Yeah.
You know, so it ended up like being a change that, if you're going to criticize this game mechanically, like, there are a bunch of canny gameplay decisions. It is limited in scope in a way that sometimes can lead to unsatisfying situations.
Yes.
Like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's some dudes that are just hanging out, white eyes, and they're like drinking beer and they're not talking to you.
Yep. You're on the outs.
Yeah. And way down below, there is a notable encounter. Like, you're in this hallway with a bunch of doors, like a Scooby-Doo hallway. And then a bunch of zombies just burst out at the same time.
Yeah. Kind of pincering, attacking you. They are regular zombies. It's not the baby ones that are really rough, mm-hmm. but they're in very close contact.
Yeah. If you don't think quick and get to one side of them, they are going to Roxbury you to death.
Yeah. You get to the bottom where there's a button in a lab and you push it because it's there.
Uh-huh.
And a missile launches from here. Like, you are participating in the dream logic of the G-Man, basically.
Yeah.
Through this game. Like, there are things you do just because you're a video game protagonist and because it's your purpose to do them.
Uh-huh.
They're not fully explained, and you do not get the sense that your character understands why they're doing it either.
Hey, Ed, which country do you hate most, Italy or France?
Yeah. Nobody ever says France. Nobody ever says Italy.
And you leave. And... we're not act five. It just has like two places, mm-hmm. a little bit of combat in it, but it is mostly exposition.
Yes. We're in kind of the finale here. So we got made it to Metropole. The city is in the shadow of the Guardian, and the Guardian is of course a giant mech.
Yeah. It's the size of the city.
Yep. We completed our delivery for this kind of last best hope for humanity. Yeah. Humanity decided to pull all of its resources into building a gigantic robot to fight like somebody Dr. Mario-ing us from space.
Yeah. Building a city-sized mech in order to fight aliens who are not descending to attack cities directly.
It does. It is very anime in that it's stupid. It's a really dumb idea for a response to this.
Oh, it's very specifically like meant to, like, in this world, like, based on notes that we read in the DLC, like, this was a plan that was put together to waste resources on something that is not going to work.
Yeah, it's a Dr. Breen kind of thing. Or it's not a Dr. Breen thing. It is a traitor thing. The only traitor kind of coming through. But it's just very funny to me that, like, anybody bought it as a thing. There are people who you run into up until this point who want the Guardian.
Yeah.
Who are like, yeah, Guardian's going to save us. We're going to have a gigantic robot that's going to fight Rain, essentially.
Yeah.
Alien Rain.
And think about it. We have taken a city's power core and a shelter CPU crystal.
Yeah.
In order to bring to this thing. Like, we have participated in completely neutering and dooming these places we have been in order to build this boondoggle.
Yeah. We get there. The station chief hears our request and says it's unusual, but maybe the leader will open the gate for us. We don't talk. in this. We do in the DLC, but our character is not talking this, so we just get silence and he responds as if we did.
Yes.
Yeah. You pass through kind of a cool place here, this library, where people pay, you rent it out by the hour to drink this stuff called vitriol, and you get really high and read books.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty sick as a little like world-building detail.
Yeah. I don't know what this is. I think about it like that that inhalant that you take in Cyberpunk, in the Cyberpunk DLC that makes you experience the stories that people tell.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And like on the other side of this, you know, you see all these people kind of having their little frolic, kind of sprawled in the chairs. There's somebody who says, Linda was right. When you're new to this, fantasy is your best bet.
Yeah. You don't want to, you know, start with horror. Yeah. We get to talk to David, who's the city's leader, and he says, okay, I'll open the city gates for you. And your train, you can make your way through. We ride north and we see the Guardian launch in the distance here.
Yeah.
And this brings us to our final chapter. One thing I'll say is I'm glad this does have a DLC, because this is an unsatisfying ending.
Oh, yeah.
The DLC is also not a very satisfying ending. We're not in the world of satisfying endings.
No.
You know, we're not getting a complete story here. But if I had just ended with this and didn't, this was just the end of it, I'd been like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, that's neat. What the fuck, though? Okay. Like, that happened.
Yeah. The DLC provides a lot of answers.
Yes.
It's like a non-annoying version of the Ada chapter from Resident Evil 6.
Yeah. Well, also not providing all of them.
Right.
You know, so we stop at this other, we're in another realm station. The mysterious guy with the gun in the eyes is in a room full of dead zombies. And he goes, I'll ride with you. And comes onto the train here. We go up to the next kind of area, and we find this building that is full of these conspiracy walls people have written on in their, thread and tacks.
Yeah, there are photographs of other train drivers, people wearing the same uniform as you.
All your IM friends.
Yeah.
We get on the train. The old man says, hey, your turning's going to happen eventually. It's going to happen to everyone. You know, your engine is what protected you. Your engine is made out of this thing that emits this radiation that's protected you.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And then he does kind of a big wham line of it, of why they were, you know, shunting resources away from actually protecting this and how they are traitors, whose side they are on, as alluded to earlier.
It's time to move on. It's not a virus. It's a medicine. It's just too powerful for some people. I'll be waiting to meet you in the new world.
Yeah. And some people have survived it. Some people have turned into zombies and some people have been fine.
Yeah.
Like people with just white eyes.
Have been more than fine. Like this is giving them, it's making them super intelligent.
A weird thing is this is the same plot as the most recent line-wide X-Men crossover, basically.
Huh.
Is a virus that comes and kills some people, helps other people, and puts some people in the middle. Mm-hmm. And there is a government that is working towards it. And there's like resistance. So, yeah. It's like another alternate future X-Men story, but it's very similar to this.
Okay.
I was reading them at the same time. It was weird.
Is Johnny Sublime there?
Johnny Sublime is not there. Revelation is the character.
Okay.
I get this. It's one of those things where, like, you ever have any of those worlds where because you only dip in it, you're fine. But when you look online, it looks like everyone has strong, angry opinions about something that is really hard to get mad at because you're not.
You're in describing that? My interaction most things that exist, actually.
Almost anything. Like, people online are so mad at this crossover. Huh. And, like, it just came to the streaming, you know, the Marvel Unlimited, the app. And I'm, like, reading it. I'm like, oh, this is relatively fun. Uh-huh. Like, why'd I be so mad at this? I guess if I spent $4 a book and collected the whole thing, like, I'd be out a bunch. But, like,
that's their fault for not trade waiting.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. You don't have to trade, or just get the fucking app. You have access to all the comics for like $78 a year. It's very funny. It reminds me of the Magic the Gathering stuff where people are losing their minds about it online. And then in real life, you know, person in real life, hey, how's it going? never truer than now.
Yeah.
So the train breaks down and we have to continue to our hometown on foot. And you know, we were just told getting out of the train, that's what's been protecting us.
Yes. You pass through some bloody cornfields. You also get a very fun troll. There's a dead guy with a briefcase. So when you loot him, you get $1 million.
Yeah.
There is no use for money after this point.
Great. We see the shattered remains of the Guardian. The Guardian was defeated. Or broke down and got defeated, whatever. We pass through this prison, where there are cells that contain descriptions of people's temperaments. And they contain different kinds of zombies. These are the government making zombies, like getting a correlation between what people are like before they got zombulated and what kind of zombie they make.
It's the most high stakes MySpace personality test ever.
Very much so. Yeah, yeah.
So you find a guy who didn't become any of the kind of zombies. He got the white eyes, and he's like, "Oh, I was looking for the bathroom. Can you let me out?" Like, he's chained up in a Magneto cell.
Yeah, he's looking for the bathroom. Yeah. We can't. There's nothing we can do though.
Yeah.
Down in the basement here, the guy with the gun is there. He's sitting next to a guy who tried to tunnel out, and we can break the wall and step out. Finish his tunneling. We can punch through walls. We've always been able to do it.
Yeah.
Here. And we get in this, like, the first real big splash of beautiful color. We're in this, like, very verdant field under a bright blue sun, blue sky with beautiful sun here.
Yes. Yeah. It's a forest. We haven't seen anything like this, especially not after the visitation gets going. Right.
Yeah.
You pass through a tent. There's a tent that has a receipt for like beer and condoms, and you think, oh yeah, people came up here to have a really good time. Then you find a shack nearby where the couple's heads are on hooks. They got zombified.
Yeah, no good. Walk by a fallen capsule and releases some gas, and we start coughing up black stuff. You know, we've been breathing gas this whole time. This is just a big dose of it.
Yeah.
We reach the mayor, and the mayor chastises us for being late. Always a surreal thing when you've done this like gigantic surreal journey and someone's like, you're late.
Uh-huh.
You know, it showing them as above whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
The president is here and he's sitting in the church from the opening of our dream, surrounded by the people with the white eyes.
Yeah. Kind of recreating that scene. The symbols are on the wall and stuff. Like the remnants, basically anybody who got turned into a mega mind from this, you know, those people have kind of like made this pilgrimage, you know, like in the stand going to Boulder. They've gone back to your hometown to like start rebuilding society. Yeah. Is what's going on.
Yeah. And they say, you know, once the portal is in place, they can send everything required here. So they're fully alienated.
Yeah. There's a combine shit.
Yes. I reach our house and we go into the room we didn't see before. It's a young girl's bedroom. And there's a crude drawing of us together on the wall. It's very cute. Mm-hmm. But then we get a really bad coughing fit and fall over. The man walks up and says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of her," shoots us, and then we get credits immediately.
Yeah. Our daughter survived. She was mega minded. Yeah. But we did not.
We did not. And then we get the DLC here, released in 2017, that makes big mechanical changes and answers a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I feel a little mixed on the mechanical changes of this.
Mm-hmm. A lot of lateral moves.
It's a lot of lateral moves. I'm glad that they did something different. Mm-hmm. It made it interesting to not just feel like I was just, you know, I was thinking about if I was playing these when they came out and playing the DLC a year later. Mm-hmm. You know, with a little bit more space, but like, yeah, just give me some more, you know, last station, final station. That's great. The fact they changed it made that go down really easy. Mm-hmm. Just playing it back to back as one experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do not play as a silent protagonist. You play as a survivalist guy named Peter, this badass, mm-hmm. who is crossing the country in a Dodge Charger, mm-hmm. Trying to find a place in the shelters that dot the landscape, trying to survive.
Yeah. And he's got this cool car, which you don't have to maintain.
No.
The like in between segments, that's it's not gameplay. Like this is a little,
there's kind a of minor like, amount of gameplay in it where you can do some crafting.
Yeah. You can do some
that's
crafting.
Really it though. You're not flipping things on your dashboard. You're not making sure the windshield wipers have the meter right. Right. Things like that.
Yeah. It's mostly a place to kind of hear some conversation with your passengers. You can only have one passenger with you at a time, and you're finding new passengers constantly.
Yep. They're like a ring slot.
Yeah.
In this almost. They have different stats. Healing, which is how much they heal you automatically when you get in the car. Mm-hmm. You no longer have to use medkits on yourself in the car. They will heal you a certain percentage. So if you can make it through the town segment, you will get healed up.
Yeah.
You also no longer have to take care of them.
Right.
There's no more taking care.
Yeah.
They have a crafting meter, which is how many resources they need to craft your various components. And then social ability, which is how like nice they are.
Yeah.
And these are all their stat blocks are like a pick two. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're not going to have somebody who's good at everything.
Yeah.
Sociability was hard for me to grok what it did in this. I know that there are different endings for saving each character, and there's a different ending for not saving anyone. You can reject everybody who can come along with you if you want to, you know, tough Iron Man it. But I didn't figure out, other than just the fact that they seemed like more pleasant, what that stat did mechanically.
Unclear.
Yeah, I didn't know whether you had grokked it or not.
No.
But you know, I was trying to find a balance between these things. I ended up doing pretty well with resources, so crafting was kind of a dump stat for me. I didn't end up having to craft that much stuff in the car.
Yeah.
You know, but just trying to find somebody who seemed like an all right person who could heal me a decent amount.
Yes. Yeah. You don't have to take care of them, but the structure of the levels has changed.
Yes.
Instead of just being purely linear, going in one direction and then kind of like doubling back, you can pick a direction come back. What you're doing is you're trying to find you have to pick up three things. You have to pick up you have to pick up gas, you have to pick up water, and you have to pick up food. And like that's enough to take you until you need to stop again.
So each level is still a scavenger hunt. It's not a scavenger hunt for a code down a linear thing where you're going down one way, you get the code, come back the other way. It's kind of a bigger open-ended map where you have to find three things.
Yeah.
These can be annoying, just in the generality, can be annoyingly hidden.
Yeah.
I got to the back to my car and I was missing one thing. So there's some room I forgot, you know, I missed. A little bit annoying here. They kind of make up for this in some maps, kind of have fast travel.
Yeah.
Like there are elevators or ways where the map will loop around. Which is a little silly, but it's useful from a gameplay perspective.
This is super nitpicky. When you reach the end of like one side, you'll loop back around and then come at these places from a different angle. They're designed so they can be approached from either angle, which is neat. The conversations are not triggered. It is kind of random which side they're going to like trigger on. So like you'll pass through like a big sawmill, you know, that's full of all these slaughtered lumberjacks or whatever. And then you get on the outside and you'll walk by a sign and say, oh, it's a sawmill.
Yeah. it's a donkey. Another thing that is different in this mechanically is that it's significantly fewer checkpoints.
Yes.
And they're further apart, which is a decision I don't know that serves the game.
No.
I understand what they're going for. Like the checkpointing was made it very easy in the first half. This is still easy. Mm-hmm. It just meant that when I got to something that was, it just made the iteration loop longer.
Yeah.
And it does not maintain what you found in between loops. So let's say you went down to some corner room and picked up the food, then went down to another area and got killed by a bunch of zombies. Mm-hmm. If you start over at a far enough back checkpoint, you still have to make that little errand to get the food.
Yeah.
A little bit annoying. It's not the end of the world, but a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
You get a revolver, that's your only weapon, and you have a baseball bat instead of your melee, which gives you a little extra reach. It is handy.
Yeah. The enemies can, I feel like the enemies are much more capable of hurting you at like a close range though. Like melee felt more dangerous than this.
Yeah. You got to keep them away if you can.
Yeah.
There are a couple of new enemy types here. There are, we get the same old, all the old ones are returning. We get some new ones as well. And the story is more direct. Mm-hmm. We answer some specific questions from the first game. For the main game, I hear, even though while also not telling a traditional narrative.
Right.
Like there's a realm and a G-Man about. That just is the case. There's a level to how literal and complete we can get the story.
Yeah. Also, the story is necessarily going to be incomplete because the conversations that you have with the different passengers, they're exclusive to that passenger. There are 11 possible ones to take. So I can't imagine that any single one's contributions to it are, crack the entire thing wide
open. Make or break it.
Yeah. But like to be strictly complete, you would need to play this 11 times.
Yeah. And I'll go as far as say that's insane behavior.
Yeah.
Like no offense if you've done that, but like I like this game a lot. It is rare the game that I want to play 11 times and it's the same each time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even really like playing something three times to get different endings. Like, I don't like doing visual novels. This mm-hmm. would play the same mechanically each time.
Yeah.
That would be a real problem.
This feels like a trap. It feels like a trap for completionists.
It feels like something that a hearty wiki community certainly would help with. Fucking get on it, gamers. Like, it is It is a big bummer that the lore did not catch on for this, because I would love to read about those. Uh-huh. I'll be damned if I'm going to play through it that many times, though.
Yeah.
So we start in our home city as Peter. We explore the building where we've been holding up. Your roommate has been writing about his theories on the council conspiracy. There's also a lot more text in this one.
Yeah.
That also gets a little bit silly. Mm-hmm. You go into a lot of rooms where there's just like empty, you know, discontinued IM conversations. Mm-hmm. It happens a lot.
Yeah.
In this, it can feel a little artificial for how much time this is over.
Yeah. The council was not specifically mentioned before. Like, we ran into leadership as Edward, but like, this group has not been named, really.
Yeah. Yeah. We now know they are the council.
Yeah. Someone on the top floor was a member of this organization called the Order of the Advent. They are skeptical of the council's intentions. This is the new, it's kind of the new faction that we're going to get here. These are fanatics.
Yep.
Is what they are.
We gas up and we leave with our roommate, our first kind of base companion.
Yeah.
We get to this town that has a cinema in it. It is lost, and we meet a projectionist in the movie theater who asks if we can take him with us. And again, we're doing a little bit of the light mechanic it was doing in the first one, where we are doing, do we take our roommate who we've known for a long time? Do we take this guy who has better stats? Do we take this guy we may like better, but has worse stats?
I took him. This guy was my carry the entire game.
Oh, wow.
Just because I never found anybody who had like better stats than him for what I was trying to accomplish.
There was a guy with like a who's like a either works at a record store or a musician guy.
Uh-huh.
Who ended up being my guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy ended up being my guy. Mm-hmm. The idea of min-maxing this and switching it constantly, if you're not trying to hunt down those endings, it is not rigorous enough to where you have to do that.
Uh-huh.
It would feel a little bit weird to me to do it.
I just like the idea of like, you know, like after I, you know, swapped somebody out and left my original roommate for dead, I like the idea of this being like a buddy road trip kind of thing.
Yeah.
With like, you know, one guy and just seeing like how the conversations go. This guy's just a regular dude. And like Peter's conversations with him are often about like Peter poking holes in his survival plans and stuff. Like he is very unequipped for what is going on.
Well, and it's worth noting also, your character in this is a real piece of shit.
Yes.
Like, he's very unpleasant. I mean, you might be surprised hearing he's a survivalist and he's not cool.
Uh-huh.
But he's like a militia survivalist guy. And he's not good.
No.
He's not cool. He's pretty annoying and bristly and mean. And, you know, useful in the apocalypse, but not pleasant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go to the next place, which is called Sandstein.
Uh-huh.
Which is one letter away from like an 80s hack comment, like Sandstein. Uh-huh. Or something like that, you know, Sandistan.
Uh-huh.
We find this government facility where we used to work. Uh-huh. Our old boss is here, and we can see, and this place used to process Electrum mm-hmm. for us.
I think that this might be part of why you don't turn, is because you worked here.
Yeah, because you have all the Electrum in you.
Yeah, yeah. So you think like, oh, they had a shelter for the workers here, and the door is locked and nobody's inside.
Yep.
It was sealed off so nobody could use it.
You have to remember the vaults were never meant to save anyone.
Right.
There's a revolver we can pick up, and we meet our first new zombie here, the Spitter. Mm-hmm. They're really cribbing the Left 4 Dead stuff.
Yeah.
These guys hawk loogies. One of the coolest things I wish I had discovered earlier mm-hmm. in the game is you can parry them out of the air with your bat.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did that by accident. And then I kept on trying to do it.
Once I could do it, I got really good at it. Cause otherwise these are a ammo tax. Like you have to fight them from a distance. They're distance enemies. Uh-huh. But once I learned that I could close the distance by parrying the spit and they can't attack you and up close, they will just try to run.
Yeah.
Very satisfying to fight.
No individual spit does a ton of damage to you, but they accumulate.
And they're mix-ups. They have these guys spitting at you while you're dealing with other guys.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
The next town is this museum town. People here are trying to stage a heist on a museum.
Uh-huh.
And there's an exhibit there that was closed down by the government. It had paintings of people who are on the council.
These are completely out of style. Yes. Like these are just like oil huge painting
Kickstarter
JPEGs.
Backer energy. Like vanity picture of a Kickstarter backer.
Yeah.
Energy. But uh-huh. they're high res.
Yeah. After this, I had a conversation with a projectionist. He's like, oh, my family's alive. Like, they're in the metropole. And Peter's like, no, they're fucking not.
Yeah. I can't remember who I had and what conversations I had in between these things. Like I said, it's whoever we run into who's a musician, I think. You can play instruments in this game. You can find rooms with band equipment, especially in the DLC, where you can press a button and play a little drums or play a little guitar.
Yeah.
It's cute.
I love whenever you can do that in a game. You just walk by because, of course, I'm going to like plink on the keys as I walk by. That's human.
It's sublime when you can choose a key.
Oh, yeah.
So we get to the raised city, Keskis, say, fa-fa-fa. And the first stop here is this fast food restaurant. And the chef wants to come with us at this point. I think I did take this guy with me. And then he replaced him for the musician. Okay. Because I think he had better healing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Someone who works in a facility here has made something. He's an architect who has kind of taken off of his projects. He was working on the wall around the metropole, but he was ripped from that because that project was stopped. And he has taken to designing some kind of dampening device that will halt signals.
Yes.
His colleagues don't think it works. He has like people from like the government leadership writing him letters telling him to stop making this thing that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Your car can't run on water that good. There are guys in the basement you find who are talking to each other and they ignore you. They have white eyes. Again, you're in the out group.
Yes.
Of this. We have find a note from the architect, whose name is Martis T. He expresses frustration that the council is stopping construction of the Metropole Wall without explanation. We know why.
Yeah.
You know, we played the last game.
Yeah, they wanted this to happen. Yeah. There's a church here, and something has slashed the wall.
Yeah. Presumably, what if there is a big thing that could have fought the Guardian if the Guardian fought?
Yes.
It's huge.
We never see it.
Yeah, there's a station here with a bunch of cargo cars, but no locomotives to pull them. And we reach our first rest stop, where a man and his wife will sell provisions. Instead of having town phases, you just go to a rest stop, and there's a person who will trade you.
Yes.
They're right there.
Yeah. You reach a kind of a rural area, a farm town, and you find some people who tried to hide in an active grain silo.
Yeah.
This is the worst idea that you could ever have. Do not go inside of a silo. Oh my God, don't.
Yeah, drowning in grain is real.
Yeah.
Real and scary.
Yeah. That's if it doesn't explode.
Yeah, that's true. We run to our first human enemies, and these are cultists. They're enemies that will come at us with crowbars. They're very different mechanically. They rush you.
Yeah.
They take a lot of hits for this. Much more difficult to kill with melee because they are within the same melee range as you.
Mm-hmm. Also, they shout stuff at you. And
yeah, some of them, yeah.
Yeah, and that distracted me from fighting them.
Yeah, because again, there's no voice acting in this game, which should be obvious by the aesthetics, but if we haven't mentioned it. So when you read something, a little word balloon pops up on the screen that you have to read while you're doing stuff.
Yeah. You find a note from the cult, from this Order of the Advent, talking about like, hey, the shelters are only for the upper echelons. You know, come to us. We'll provide transportation and we will take care of you.
Yeah, but we saw their trucks and they have jails. The bed of the truck is a jail.
It's like a circus caravan cage.
Very much so. Nelson's dad's in there. late Simpsons. In a house, we find a note from a woman to her husband. She's leaving them because he's joining the cult.
Yeah.
And upstairs, we find a rage zombie.
Yeah.
Here, kind of a rage zombie month on the network.
Yeah.
That will kill you instantly.
Yeah. They do not appear different than the regular guys. But when you hit them, like red tendrils start coming out of them.
Yeah.
It's a very strange look. I have a question for you, Gary. Mm-hmm. There is something new mechanically about the regular zombies in this, maybe. Some zombies, they die like
they
do
to
in the
ground.
Original. There are ones that I think look a little bit more floppy that will fall to the ground and then come at you. And I do not know if I am making up a difference between them or if it's just that some regular zombies fall and some do not.
I think that I did not notice a visual distinction between them.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like something that was set up like a gotcha. Mm-hmm. You would get to an area where there would be a zombie. You would take it down and there'd be something else to draw your attention. Mm-hmm. And that first zombie would fall down to the ground and start eating your feet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we forgot to mention that. There are definitely zombies that do that now. I could not visually distinguish them.
Yeah.
But I was also always moving and fighting. I never had them like next to each other in a lineup.
Yeah.
You know, so have to get the Resident Evil art book,
whatever, for this. Or a fucking wiki.
Yeah. Yep. Or a wiki. Fans, fucking dudes. Mm-hmm.
Do our work for us. God.
Yeah. We can find fragments of your roommate's book here. The Council Exposed. no good books end with exposed. Lying around, and there were pages about how like Vermond had to rebuild this council, mm-hmm. and brought in a man named Arthur Vane, who had criminal connections. These are the first time we're seeing these names.
Yeah,
they are important names.
Yes,
for this DLC,
and Arthur Vane has taken it over as we find out. There's another survivor here who's just chilling in the upper levels of a brewery as there's a monster party underneath them. He does not seem terribly concerned about the monster party.
Yeah, this may have been the guy he took. I can't remember. Which yeah. guy he was. We reach this Electra mine here, and there's a note from the president demanding that they hand over all the crystals that they dig up.
Mm-hmm.
All the Electrum here. You have to make sure that Ambrosia goes to the mayor.
Yes.
The next area is this flooded town that we head to. I'm glad you noticed this. I really like this. There's a house full of commemorative plates. Probably the thing that has the least value.
Yep.
Once a survivalist situation happens, you know, it's that one with the Hamburger University with all the little McDonald's cheeseburgers sitting at desks.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I'd trade something for it, but I'm rare in that respect.
Gary, have I got something for you?
Ooh, baby.
I'm not trading it away. I'm keeping it.
It would be awesome. Yeah.
Dangle it over.
Leave it to me in your will.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, no, there's like a note. There's a note from like this guy's roommate or somebody who's staying with him. Like, you're really overreacting to one broken plate, bro.
Yeah. The new members of the council overthrew Vermond, as we mentioned, and started taking measures to sabotage preparations for the second visitation.
Yeah.
Then Arthur Vane disappeared. Yeah. So this is all stuff we knew. The mm-hmm. game is just confirming it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And telling us the names who did it.
Yes.
Here's the guy, the musician with a bunch of money, who I took.
He's like, hey, you need to take me with you. It's like, well, what can you do? Well, I mean, not much, but I got a lot of money. Do I look like somebody who needs money? Yeah.
Yeah, he's got good healing stat at the very least. Uh-huh. He's bad at crafting, fine at healing and social.
Okay.
If I recall, which mm-hmm. is why I chose him. And you get a big payout to buy stuff, but mostly I just wanted that, and because, you know, musician guy, I'll go hang out with this guy. You listen to music while you're in the car. Mm-hmm. In this, you can turn it off if you want to.
Yeah.
This guy has a lot of comments during the trip about the music.
Yes.
That's playing in the car.
He's one of those people who yells, "Don't touch my tunes, bro."
Yeah, yeah. Well, he thinks you are. He wants to touch your tunes. You're driving, but you can't touch the tunes.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. One of the supplies we need is in the Adventist church. And we see the statue, and it's the same statue from our dreams in the main game.
Yeah, it's the statue that was in the house of the old guy. I made a mistake taking this note. Yeah. Yeah. The weird Draculated mansion.
Yeah, not the dream, and the guy who was harvesting.
Yes. This is funny. I don't know if this happens with anybody else, but because I just went through this flooded place, Peter bullies the projectionist. Like, hey, give me your shoes. Like, well, why? It's like, well, my shoes are wet. And I'm like, oh, well, what am I supposed to do? I'm like, you stay in the car anyway. Give me your fucking shoes.
You don't need your shoes. Hold them out the window while we drive.
Yeah.
We go to a lumber town. This is some eco-terrorist has slaughtered all the lumberjacks here.
Yeah.
It seems like we should have bigger priorities at this point.
Yeah.
We head next to Ristal Ruins. This city fell after Adam handed over the crystal power source. So we've been to Ristal. These names are all familiar. It's a little tricky because they're made up fantasy names.
Yeah.
You know, this could be me telling on myself, but when I see a made up fantasy name in a thing, it is harder for me to recall.
Right.
You know, but we are seeing the aftermath specifically of the first game.
Yeah. I only made some of these places, like Flooded Town, Lumber Town, like there was no name given that I saw. I only put in a name when I knew what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like you go into the tower, and you like go through, Adam Thornton's kind of like, little hideaway here behind his office. And there's a portrait here that says traitor, spray painted over it of I believe it's Adam's dad.
Yeah.
Who was the ruler here before. And you find him and he is talking to the hunter guy, the old man with the gun from the previous game. This is Arthur Vane. Yeah. The G-man who went missing.
Yes.
After a certain amount of time.
Adam was supposed to damage the crystal before handing this over there. And Vane wants to take Adam down to the shelter because he failed a test of some sort.
Yeah.
These characters will ignore you after a certain period. The Arthur Vane will acknowledge you sometimes.
Yeah.
In a way that is, again, very creepy and G-Man-like to me. We find this email chain and it says Adam was responsible for recruiting the engineer in the main game. So we're kind of getting these pieces here. And then we get back in the car on the ride. Your companion can talk about how there's only one shelter left in the mountains. I had this as well. Does he tell you about a shortcut?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's going through a canyon.
We took two different guys and they told us the same thing. Like, I believe that there is probably unique dialogue, but there's also repeated dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes there's, just things to motivate the story.
Yeah.
That need to get across.
It's frustrating in terms of it wanting it to make enticing to replay it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another rest stop here. Like this is kind of an act break. It's the same guy from before. He's in rough shape. Like he's all bandaged up. His wife is gone. Your character will draw attention to this on the ride afterward. And the front of the van is covered in black goop. It's been a rough ride to get here.
They got dunkarooed. they got dunked like a dunkaroo.
Yeah.
We go to a prison town. There's another silo here that we go down in, and or underground silo. And there's a message chain talking about plans to fire a disabling missile at the Guardian. So again, further sabotage.
Yeah.
Here. And then we find a prison built into the walls of this mountain canyon. With a watchtower in the center. And we're doing a lot of combat here.
Yeah, this is where I had the most problem. I was out of ammo. And as you're approaching the tower, from the left side, there are exploding guys. There's a mix up of exploding guys and the soldiers, people that you kind of need the pistol to deal with, that you need ammo for. So I had taken the left path and gotten there and got stuck. And I was like, well, shit, I'm going to have to circle back around and hope that I find some bullets.
Yeah.
A lot of reloading checkpoints here, and the worst checkpoints in the DLC kind of bit me.
Yeah, this is where I would not mind that happening if the iteration loop was longer. I also did, this is a very classic Gary Butterfield thing, of going into an area that was really cold, hard, and there being something, if I'd come in another way, that would have made it easier. So for example, an exploding barrel that I didn't see. But I just figured out a way to do it the hard way. And then saw afterwards, once I went to the area, I could have gone from the other side. It would have been way easier. That kept happening to me as well. Happened in the main game as well. I will never learn to shoot a barrel. It's probably because I've trained myself to ignore colors of things. But I will never shoot a barrel.
Yeah.
The game wants me to shoot a barrel.
Yeah.
It sucks. I'm dumb. So we get here. We find this hidden cell with a chained up skeleton. So we're getting into Castlevania hours here. The guards were ordered to stop the torture and just let this man die. This is Vermond White, the old leader of the council. And he wrote a note to Adam, his son, saying that he and the blacksmith are the only two members left who are loyal to him. He wants them to finish the Guardian and the wall against the orders of the others.
Yeah. This might be the only traitor. No, it's Vane. Yeah. Who's the only traitor?
Yeah, it's Vane. This guy was going to actually, he was on Team Guardian.
Yeah. For as ridiculous as it is, he believed in the plan.
Yes. You know, at the very least, he was not turning over his belly to the aliens.
Right. Yeah. Next up is this mountain town. You find an old house with a railway map on the wall. I think this is a dispatcher or something. There's a message chain talking about how lots of people have been deployed to get parts for the Guardian down to the metropole from the kind of the extremes from the hinterlands. And the dispatcher is super annoyed that there is this unpredictable experimental train on the fleet that turned out to be the only one that got there.
Yep, our last character. After this, your character can start getting tired. Peter gets into a wreck, as we're going, and ends up getting to a wreck. I don't think, actually, this didn't happen to me. No? This might be a passenger-specific thing.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah, how did you get separated? Because like my guy, like during the conversation, he nodded off, and then the crash happened. My dude died.
I don't remember. I got further ahead.
Okay.
In this, so it's been a while since I played this.
Mm-hmm.
With the move and stuff, I was not moving across country, and uh-huh. got really far ahead in playing.
Oh,
largely because I'm nervous about a game that's coming up that I mm-hmm. haven't even started yet. It's my stupid brain. I didn't need to get this far ahead, but I cannot recall exactly. So this does not sound familiar to me, is probably a more accurate way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. But you're alone. Your car is gone. Your passenger is dead. And you have to continue on foot, you know, for this like last ditch effort to get to a shelter. You're headed to this place.
Yeah, no, I guess maybe, okay. I maybe didn't realize where we were. Mm-hmm. In the story. This probably did happen to me.
It happened super abruptly.
I didn't remember my guy dying is the thing I didn't remember. I remember doing the last stretch alone, but I did not remember my passenger dying.
Okay.
So yeah, who knows? I could be misremembering. Mm-hmm. So we're on foot now for the kind of the ending here.
Yeah. you're searching for this shelter, which ends up being the cultist one that you had heard about. Kind of crossing the countryside, you find a dead cultist and, you know, take his clothes. Like, you bandage yourself up and replace your ruined clothes from the wreck. Like, this was a cultist who was drunk and fell out of his guard tower.
And we get to the Adventist facility, and this is a massive prison. All the people they've been claimed to rescue are in these cages in the back of trucks and mm-hmm. stuff. They promise people they could take them to the shelter, but they're not.
No. They're trying to make their own like super people.
Yeah.
They know about the discrepancy between you know, about what happens to certain people when they get exposed to the gas. They're filling these cages with people and recovering unexploded capsules and just like lowering the cages down onto the capsules and blowing them up, giving them direct exposure. There's an email message that you read that says, hey, none of the efforts like this to create a reborn were successful. The first time we've gotten a name for the white-eyed people, reborn.
Yeah. So this thing that was against the council, this was controlled opposition, kind of, mm-hmm. you know, not exactly, but like they wanted a similar thing. They just wanted it for them.
Their own. Yeah.
Yeah. They want their own version of it. We reach the cult leader, and he knows we don't belong. And he'd be like, I'm new. And he'd be like, I know everybody here. He calls the guards. We get a chase sequence, which is cool. That's a new kind of gameplay mode in this. As we're chased out of the facility, everyone's chasing us. And then Arthur Vane pops out to help us and ushers us through a door.
Through a door into a realm.
We are now in this like floating sky landscape for a long period where we're going to go through long periods of walking and looking at alien, you know, geometry and landscapes and then talking to important characters or instances of them.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
You're walking over chunks of landscape that are kind of floating in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. We find the president berating Adam. His city was destroyed because the people resisted.
Yeah. You know,
and we can't talk to them. These are memories or these are bits of history we're seeing.
Yes. You find a younger Arthur Vane trying and failing to recruit the blacksmith, the guy who built the Guardian. The blacksmith doesn't want to betray humanity, you know, saying like, hey, I can assure that you will become a reborn. Somehow he has that power, maybe relating to his disappearance and his G-manness, but the blacksmith doesn't go along.
Yeah. I mean, like putting it together at the end, this is a guy who made a deal with the aliens and has special privileges. This is our brain.
Yeah.
You step out into a blue sky and it is a medieval battlefield full of knights mm-hmm. in armor and your hair goes knights. Mm-hmm. So there's time shenanigans possibly happening here too.
Yeah.
I like this reality of walking out into a battlefield full of dead knights.
Mm-hmm.
The part of me that does want to know what this is, you know, it's not the loudest part of me. I don't need to solve a story. I don't need to know everything that happens in one of these things. But I was like a little, come on, you know, mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah.
It was enough for us going through recent history and kind of learning the context of this game. Now you're just kind of showing off. reach this facility where we meet Arthur Vane in this little room. He says, listen, I'm going to get you space in a shelter, but it's going to be a high cost. You have to murder the next man that comes into this room. You know, and he says, you can't come back. And then it says in red text, without my help.
Or the back is in red. There have been certain words that are in red, like mentions of Jesus in the Bible or mentions of God in the Bible. I forget which one. Usually referring to they or them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like highlighting their importance. You know, you can't come back without my help. And Peter asks, like, hey, why can't you murder this guy? And Vane gives the most unsatisfying answer. My overseers will not let me.
Yes. So Vane leaves, you stay in a corner, the door opens, and who is it but the conductor from the main game?
Yeah.
And we don't kill him. You know, we can't do it. We can't. And the conductor says, hey, we're taking the first thing words he said in the entire thing says, hey, we're taking survivors to the LABS shelter. And we did agree to go with him. Yeah. I do not know if this is an alternate reality. I don't know if we changed history.
No, we picked up this guy. Remember when I made a note back in the
to the wall, whose nerves were real shot.
Yeah, he was like, hey, get to the train as quickly as possible.
We're in some kind of time loop or something. Yeah. We're replaying the time loop thing.
Yeah, or like we're just, we are playing, these are other things that have lined up, and both of these happen in a void, and maybe you like jump to a different port, to a different part in the timeline to like kind of sync up.
It's timey something.
Yeah.
Brother. And that's the end. Mm-hmm. So no more additional. So like what we know is we have a Breen. We have a character who has some kind of importance. We have a conductor, a Gordon Freeman. We have a Peter who shows up, and we know about the invasion and that the council and people were making deals with the aliens because they got to evolve. Mm-hmm. That's what we got.
Yes.
Like it's not a story necessarily. It's like a premise and like a setup.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, non-derogatorily, like it is very satisfying to pick up little pieces of this and let it kind of wash over you and figure out the things we can find out.
Yeah.
You know, I think mileage is going to vary a little bit on how much you require satisfaction or catharsis in something, you know, if not literal meaning, like just something that is shaped like a story.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's not a whole lot that implies the future of this. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't land at a status quo in this. It does feel like the story is ongoing.
Yeah.
And this does feel like chapter two of a thing to me. We're at the end of Half-Life episode two.
Right.
You know, and that's just it. You know, if this had been more successful, I feel like we could have gotten something that like wrapped everything up and pulled everything together.
Yeah.
We don't.
No.
You know, that ship has long sailed as 9 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, like that sense of lack of resolution is especially big at the end of the main game. Like a lot of the like context that I end up giving, like, you know, like at the end where it's like, oh yeah, no, the small percent of people who are still left alive and became reborn, like they've gone back to your hometown and like set up a like, you know, new society. When I was playing that, I was not sure that what I was seeing was actually real.
Yeah,
or if it was a dream or what? Like, I didn't keep the names straight in the main game. I kind of only had a real vague idea, and I like it was an uncomfortable place to be, you know, without any like resolution or certainty, and just kind of, you know, almost passively observing what was happening and saying, oh, I'll probably figure this out later, and that later never coming.
Yeah.
It was an interesting tension to exist in.
It is a risk that you run when you do storytelling where you're going to have realms and non-literal non-things that happen. Mm-hmm. Once you introduce that idea, you can never be sure if something is happening.
Yeah.
After that point. And that is real live ammo. Mm-hmm. In storytelling, you can very, very quickly hit kind of a, you know, tipping point with that where nothing can feel like it matters.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you can no longer be invested in plot. You start leaning on world building or theme stuff. Mm-hmm. And that stuff's pretty strong in this. Like, that's pretty good. It ended up being, it's a hard, like, I do recommend this game. It's one of those things where you want to recommend it, but I don't want to overplay it.
Yeah.
You know, too much, because like there are things that do all the stuff this does and do it a little bit better, you know, than this. It's nothing new. It's a Half-Life story. It's Half-Life 2 in a lot of ways, mixed with Left 4 Dead. You know, it's not doing anything new.
Going back to the beginning, when we were addressing, you know, an audience of people who have not played this, but who didn't know the story, I wish I would have said this. I think that the person who would really be into this is if they like super dug inside.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a little bit of inside thing, even though I still think inside even has a bigger catharsis at the end.
Oh yeah. Like, but like similar tone and like, a, you know, similar sense of like being lost.
Yeah.
At least through the entire thing. They end differently, both in terms of catharsis and how much information you have.
Yeah.
But it is a similar feeling, and they are similar enough that I feel like I could safely say if you liked one, you will like the other.
I think so too. Even if the gameplay is very different.
Yeah.
You know. Inside's one of those games we have not done. We did on Comrade. I think you talked about it on the level as well.
Yeah.
But we've never done it on WAF. It'd be an easy putt someday because I do like that game. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a pretty good comparison to that. I do have a vague feeling of having a little bit of a roller coaster of delight when I realized this was going to be a game where mechanical action resource segments were going to interface with kind of management segments, and then realizing the limited scope to which they interact with each other, and how shallow both those systems are while still being fun in the hands.
Yeah,
that is how I feel. So recommended. It is to me a light recommend. This isn't like, you know, drop everything, but it's good. If it sounds like your shit, this is definitely worth playing. I do wish more people played it, and I do wish it was more successful, so we maybe would have gotten a little bit of, if not like direct closure, because I'm okay with ambiguity, a little bit more exploration of this world, if only so they could do more of that world building and kind of explore some of these feelings and moods a little bit more. Yeah. Good game. Thank you, Ivan.
Thank you, Ivan.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're any kind of marginalized person and you have a product or project that you would like to have us shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. We'd be happy to do it. If you have thoughts about the final station, Donkey Kong Country 2 or Castlevania Bloodlines, write in at duckfeed.tv/contact. If you have individual thoughts and individual games, please send us individual responses. Keep your responses brief and specific.
Yeah. The deadline is always the 15th of any given month. Same thing for April's games, which are Dead Space 2, We Heart Katamari, Halo Wars, and Resident Evil Requiem.
Yes. Yeah, we'd really appreciate it and looking forward to all that stuff. If you want to hear these premium episodes, which is going to be Bloodlines and Resident Evil Requiem, and, you know, all of our Resident Evil episodes are fucking great. Not to be, you know, to pat ourselves on it, but you want that. Yeah. You can do so by joining our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You'll not only get Resident Evil Requiem, you'll also get Resident Evil 8 through 1.
Yeah.
Is that some of those are actually on the public feed. But
yeah,
most of those, I think, are premium. And you'll also get a bunch of other bonus shows, Unfilmable. This month, we're talking about Zodiac. We talked about 28 Days Later, to allude to earlier with Rage Zombies.
Yeah.
We are providing a really good value, we think.
Yeah.
So we'd love it if you did that. Helps us keep the lights on, and we're proud of it.
Even good for horror, for it being like February into March.
Yeah. Yeah. Christmas in July.
Yeah. If you can't support us, we understand. Please leave a rating or review and tell your friends. Also do that if you're supporting us. It's not an either or.
Yeah. Do both, please. Also, big thanks to Gwen, our producer. Big thanks to Gwen. And what should they watch out for until next time, Kay?
Watch out for collaborators.
Yeah. The cats. So people know this if they're on the Patreon. I'm having some like weird remodeling shit. We had to keep the cats in Liv's office. You know, for 2 days locked up, and today is the first day they don't have to be, and they both were just in there all day, and I am so disgusted at their compliance in advance. Like, it is just like, I love them so much and I respect their independence, but they are failing me on a level that's not been seen before.
Yeah. So you shouldn't roll over like that. Be ungovernable. I know,
they absolutely rolled over like that.
It would be like, it would create so many problems if you actually acted on my desires for you.
Why can't you be like this at the vet? Like, I'll just hang out in this room and cry if you close the door, but like, give me a break. Grow up.